It's a minute or two after 9 at 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, where for this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Good morning. It's time now for Talking Animals on KUCI. Now, if I read carefully between the lines, I think he wants her to give him back his dog. This is Slobberbone with a song called Give Me Back My Dog as we ease into today's edition. of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, and streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise, the whole shebang, the whole nine yards, the whole enchilada. I don't know if there's any other phrase like that. If so, I hope to be informed of them shortly. Is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine, home, as I'm quick to point out within the course of the confines of Talking Animals, of the Anteaters. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, and I absolutely urge you to use that number. Call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love, love, love to get calls here, Talking Animals. You can also instant message us via AOL Instant Messenger. The screen name is Talking Animals. And there's other ways that are less immediate but darn effective to be in touch with us as well. You can email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. And by way of our cool website, freshly updated, I would like to point out and even applaud webmaster extraordinaire John Taylor. So it's talkinganimals.net. Again, make no mistake, it's .net, folks. Also, before I move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another smoking hot topic laden edition of the Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a spirited balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting our nifty aforementioned website, talkinganimals.net, where again, thanks to webmaster extraordinaire John Taylor, every show we've ever broadcast is archived up through and including last Monday's show featuring Kinky Friedman. So, very cool. So, if you've seen the website or listened to the show before, or even if you're new to it, let me tell you then. The heart of the program really is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today, our guest is Jane Hoffman, president of the Mayor's Alliance for New York City's Animals, which brings together more than 60 nonprofit animal care groups based in and around Manhattan with a collective goal to make New York City no-kill, sort of a two-tiered phase plan, but aiming to make it no-kill within 5 to 10 years in this graduated plan. It's obviously an enormous collective with an enormous goal, and surely some enormous challenges along the way for anyone trying to steer 60 different nonprofit groups along a similar path, as Jane Hoffman apparently seeks to do. Of course, they've also received some enormous grants for this very important mission, to the tune of about $20 million or so, just in the last several months or so. So there'll be much to talk about when she joins us in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news, and I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals, not only this week's animal news items. Of course, that's absolutely and obviously fair game, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss. Announcements, maybe you have a fundraiser, a benefit, or something else, an animal-related event coming up you want to bring to our attention, by all means. Any observations in the animal world, maybe another animal-related news story that as we dip into our segment today, and if you don't hear it, then maybe you want to call it to our attention. Any and all those things are most welcome. And again, the phone number is 949-824-5824. 949-UCI-KUCI. Turning now to interesting or important developments. Let's say and or important, shall we? Developments recently in animal news. Take a look, these are local, regional, national, sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight. And with any luck to get your comments on and discuss, we also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, having said that, wait for it now. Let's talk turkey, as it were. Geez, looks like we might even already have a caller. Is that possible, or is there an errant caller? Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI Talking Animals.
Duncan Strauss, how are you?
Good, who's this?
This is Cameron.
Oh, hi, Cameron. You're on the air live on Talking Animals. What's going on?
Well, I just wanted to let everybody know, I'm looking at the life section of the Register today, and guess who's Pretty Meg is right there on the front page.
Well, that's very kind of you. I was actually just, this first segment of our animal news was going to thank the Orange County Register's writer Valerie Takahama and photographer Sang Park for, it's really a fantastic piece on talk animals that is indeed in today's Register, and sort of embarrassingly huge, Cameron, but I mean, it's very nice and very much appreciated, so...
Good job, Duncan. I'm proud of you.
Oh, gosh, thanks. It's so nice of you to call in, and, almost better that someone else point out. It seemed a bit self-congratulatory, but I just wanted to really thank the Register people anyway, because they just, they did a great job, and, I asked the photographer when he came in if he could just use a lens that didn't make me look too old or jowly, and he actually complied. There's only one shot where, I really kind of looked like a little too doughy face for my taste. So, anyway,
that's
very
great.
Cool. Well, thanks for calling in, Cameron. That's very nice. By the way, Cameron has his own cool show here on KUCI, and you should check that out. It's the, I want to just make sure after all that I get the exact right hour. Cameron, are you still there?
Yeah, it's the OC Variety Hour, Wednesdays at 8 a.m.
Yeah, it's very cool. One of my many favorite shows, but it's really well done. That's Cameron Jackson, the Orange County Variety Hour, 8 to 9 a.m. here on KUCI on Wednesday. So thanks again for calling in, Cameron. That's really nice of you. I appreciate that.
Anytime, Duncan.
Okay,
see you later.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, yeah, he really does a great show, and it's really fast-paced, and they covered a lot of ground, and there's a really neat segment. I mean, it's just generally fast-paced, but there's a neat segment, too, where they blast through, whether it's he or a co-host, or one time I listened and it was his dad on with him. But anyways, they just blast through a really, huge array of cool topics and observations of things going on, and there's actually a ticking clock and stuff. So anyways, check that out. Again, it's the Orange County Variety Hour, Wednesday mornings here on KUCI from 8 to 9 a.m. with Cameron Jackson. So again, very nice of him to call in and point that out. And again, very nice of the Register folks. I really, really appreciated that story. And if that gets more folks aware of the show and aware of KUCI and aware of the website, talkinganimals.net, very cool. All right, now, on a less upbeat or celebratory note by far, want to start off with the piece that ran actually just last Tuesday, a little too late for last week's edition of the Animal News on Talking Animals here, but the headline, Southland Sea Lions Succumbing to Toxin. It starts off, at least 22 sick or dead lions stricken by a debilitating toxin have washed up on Southern California beaches in recent weeks, raising fears that the poison could kill hundreds more this summer. Three dead sea lions believed to have ingested the substance were discovered in San Pedro last Monday morning, one at Cabrillo Beach and two at White Point, rescue workers said. Late Monday afternoon, a sick, pregnant female lion washed up on Venice Beach. On Sunday, four of the ailing mammals, at least one of them pregnant, were rescued from Dockweiler State Beach near Playa del Rey, Venice Beach, Santa Monica State Beach, and Will Rogers State Beach, and taken to a marine care center in San Pedro for treatment. At least three other sick sea lions were found recently on some of the same beaches. In Orange County, the toxin had been detected in at least 11 pregnant sea lions in Huntington Beach and Newport Beach in recent weeks, and all succumbed to illness, said Michelle Hunter, director of animal care at the Pacific Marine Mammal Center in Laguna Beach. Perhaps not coincidentally, the past guest on Talking Animals. Quote, it's put a tremendous strain on us, said Hunter, whose center treated some of the sea lions. It's hard for the volunteers and very disheartening to see these sea lions have seizures because it's not just affecting one life, it's affecting two. They are such beautiful, intelligent, graceful animals. Sea lions were poisoned by doimoic acid, which is produced by a naturally occurring algae. Sardines, anchovies, clams, mussels, and other marine life feed on the algae and are in turn eaten by sea lions, dolphins, and seabirds such as pelicans. Passed on in this way, the toxin can cause a neurological disorder, resulting in seizures, disorientation, loss of muscle coordination, and death. The story goes on from there, but we'll, of course, monitor this very closely. I think since this story ran, the situation seems to have subsided a bit, so that's good right off the bat. And another, again, sometimes the animal news isn't necessarily all upbeat and fun, and starting off with a couple of rough ones here. This ran, I think I saw this over the weekend from Associated Press. A headline, San Francisco boy dies in dog mauling. And the daily is indeed San Francisco. A boy was fatally mauled by at least one of his family's pit bulls at a home near Golden Gate Park, authorities said. The attack occurred about 3:15 p.m., about a block from the park, said San Francisco Fire Lieutenant Bill Wickliffe, 12-year-old, identified by school officials as Nicholas Fibish, was attacked in his family's apartment as neighbors heard his mother scream, "Help me, help me." A police officer shot a female dog to death when it wouldn't allow him to enter the apartment, San Francisco Police Sergeant Neville Gittin said. A male dog was found inside the apartment and captured, Gittin said. The dogs each weighed about 80 pounds, Gittin said. It wasn't immediately clear if both dogs were involved in the attack. Neighbors said the dogs were pets of the boy's family, and it goes on from there. And, you know, I think one of the things I want to be working on for Talking Animals is, in the wake of this story, and unfortunately something fairly bad that happened on our street, right where I live in Costa Mesa, because I know a lot of people did know this more than I do, but chows, I mean, pit bulls, of course, are the big sinister dog villains, and in this story, I guess apparently rightly so, especially since it was a family dog. But what I didn't realize until very recently is chows can be very aggressive in that same way. And there was a weird thing. I got someone else calling here. Let's... Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI.
Hi, I'm looking for Duncan Strauss.
That's me. You're on the air live on KUCI. Is that what you mean to be?
Duncan Strauss, it is Lucy Demochkin calling you.
Okay. How's it going, Lucy? Wow. All right. This is an old high school buddy and frequent tormentor, but how's it going, Lucy?
This is too good. I think that English class, that Mrs. Cunningham English class, has really paid off.
Well, yeah. I
the writing skills.
Right. And the, I mean, I guess, although mostly I'm stealing the writing from newspapers, so I can't really take too much credit so far, but...
Okay, but, and also the humorous part.
Yeah, that...
You were in training with Susie Klein.
Right.
Myself.
Exactly.
Yes, I have a phone call into her as well. Anyway, I just wanted to touch base with you after that great article today in Orange County Register.
Yeah, I was so appreciative. I mean, they really did such a nice job, and, I didn't quite expect anything that gigantic...
Fantastic.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. And everything's good with you, Lucy?
Pardon me?
Everything's good with you?
Everything's great. I just had to support a fellow Harbor High School sailor.
Well, that's very nice. Well, I hope you'll email talkinganimals@AOL.com so we can figure out how to get in touch and get caught up.
That would be great.
Okay, cool. Thanks so much for calling.
Good luck with the program.
Thank you very much,
Lucy. Sounds great. Talk to you later, Duncan.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, you never know what a nice newspaper article is going to do, and going to flush out someone from high school, which I can assure you was many years ago, as unfortunately the article didn't include my age, but I guess they had to. Okay. So, anyways, what I was starting to say though is really awful incident that happened a week before last on our street, and in fact, to a certain extent, in our home. Our beloved elderly cat Otis, who I've talked about a number of times on the show and is kind of all over the Talking Animals website in various ways, is, you know, old, frail, and as part of that can't really see. He's not completely blind, but he's close to that. And so, as a result, we leave the front door open a lot of time because he's unfortunately an outdoor cat and he needs to come and go, and that's the only way to do it. So, the other night, it's kind of late, everybody's kind of hit the sack, we hear this kind of crazy noise, and get up, and there's two chows, in our house, right in the front doorway. So I kind of shoo them away, and Otis is curiously wet, and then we look to see if water bowls or anything have been knocked over, and they haven't been, but we dry him off, he's all wound up and, of course, crazed, because there's been two dogs in the house, which isn't normally the case. And then we finally, you know, hit the sack. Then the next morning, we learn that another cat that lives across the street from us was killed. And finally, it all got pieced together by the animal control department. And, of course, it was those two chows. And what I didn't know, and again, we'll do a program on this more properly soon, is that chows are wildly aggressive, or can be, and really sort of the equivalent in many ways of pit bulls. So felt so bad for these people who, of course, lost their cat, and, our beloved Otis came perilously close if we hadn't jumped up and kind of shooed those dogs away, apparently. So anyway, we will get into that. I do digress a little bit, but for those who don't know about that tendency of chows, it's certainly important to keep an eye out for them if they're roaming around as they were. And apparently we later found out that's not the first time that they've been roaming at least out of their owner's control. I mean, I don't know that they've done anything else to any other cats in the neighborhood. But at any rate, the Talking Animals news segment continues. This is actually just sort of an extended photo caption, but important nonetheless. It's a great picture of a huge bald eagle. And the caption says, biologist Peter Sharp with the Institute for Wildlife Studies holds an eagle that was relocated to Santa Cruz Island. The National Park Service brought 7 juvenile bald eagles to the island as part of an effort to establish the bald eagle population on the Channel Islands. The bald eagles had disappeared from the islands in the 1950s and 60s due to DDT poisoning of their ocean-based food. And supplies of 7 bald eagles, which came from the San Francisco Zoo, were placed in a hack tower, so-called, below, mounted 15 feet above the ground so they can get acclimated to their new environment. And then after a month or so of that, the birds will be released. All right, we're going to jump into our animal news quiz because we're running a little behind, and we want to jump into the comedy corner and then welcome our guest, Jane Hoffman. So this, as you probably know, if you've listened before, and if you don't, let me quickly run down. It's a true-false question. And if you're the first person to call with the correct answer, you will have your choice of many prizes. Among them, the DVD by Triumph the Insult Comic Dog, various books, including Out on a Leash, written by Shirley MacLaine, but the reason it's a prize here is that it's co-written by her dog, of course. We also have a book called Meatless Meals for Working People. We've got CDs, we've got T-shirts, we've actually got some cool Talking Animals stuff. Talking Animals T-shirt, Talking Animals sweatshirt, Talking Animals coffee mug. Got a nice T-shirt from Paws, which has a neat little drawing of an elephant, front saying elephants don't belong in circuses. And we've got dog toys, or cat toys, dog collars, sort of other cool things. So anyway, you would have your choice of one of those if you're the first person to call in with the correct answer to this true-false question. All right, here we go. The average weight of a horse's head is less than 12 pounds, more than twice as heavy as a human head. True or false? The average weight of a horse's head is less than 12 pounds, more than twice as heavy as a human head. 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, if you happen to know that one. And I think we'll probably wrap it up right there, at least for now. If we have time, we'll come back to some more of the news stories we had lined up for you for today. But if there are ever any news stories, animal-related news stories, that or events, announcements of events you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@aol.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us with comments about the show, suggestions of future animal topics, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, any other thing that's on your mind in the animal world. That email again is talkinganimals@aol.com, and I'm pleased to remind you, perhaps redundantly so, about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check that site out. It's talkinganimals.net. Again, it's .net. .net, I'm telling you. All right, and sign up for the email list so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of all the shows, assorted photographs and articles, all kinds of links, other audio pieces and more. So please stop by and take a look around. Again, it's talkinganimals.net. All right, it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Eddie Izzard with a piece called Talk to the Animals on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
But, you know, whales, they're intelligent. They do whale song. We don't know what it means, but I think that whales are traveling at 78. They're traveling at 78 speed, and if we take them up to 45 speed, we'll find they're actually going, I love you, baby. Yeah, they're DJs, you see. DJs of the sea. Because sound travels well in water, and they need a big PA to be a DJ, but they've got their whole bodies. Yeah, it works, doesn't it? This next song is going out to all the goldfish down by the Azores. I love you, baby. So they're intelligent, and dolphins, they're intelligent, because we all saw the documentary Flipper. Well, dolphins came up going, what's that? What's that flip? Shanghai Check is having trouble. Mao Zedong has taken over mainland China. Shanghai Check has retired to Taiwan with some of his followers. where they will have a complete disregard for international copyright rules. Is that what you're saying, Flip, or do you want fish? Because every episode of Flipper, he'd say the same thing. Always having a problem. What's that? What? A boy trapped in a well, trapped in the water. Three boys fell out of a ship, a small ship, a big ship. Two syllables. Big ship, small ship. Sounds like the deep. Bit like the deep, bit of shark, jaws, da, 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 like that. But gone with the wind. Okay. And they were all like that. There was Skippy. Yeah. What's that, Skip? A boy trapped, drowning in a desert. Drowning in a desert. Ill. He's in a sandy place. He's ill. He's got a bad leg. What? Gone with the wind? And Lassie as well. What? You know, Lassie, Flippy, Skippy, all that E sound. Except for Flipper.
That's right, except for Flipper. That was Eddie Izzard in the Comedy Corner with a piece called Talk to the Animals, taken from his album Circle. The Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way, and some of you perhaps arrive through our small website, talkinganimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed in Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. All right, earlier in the show I mentioned that our guest today is Jane Hoffman, president of the Mayor's Alliance for New York City Animals, which brings together more than 60 nonprofit animal care groups based in and around Manhattan with the collective goal to make New York no kill. It's obviously an enormous collective with an enormous goal and surely some enormous challenges along the way for anyone trying to steer 60 different nonprofit groups along any path, really, as Jane Hoffman apparently seeks to do. Of course, the Alliance has received actually about $20 million towards this goal in grants, which should greatly assist in their mission while reflecting just how supremely significant that mission is viewed. So having said that, there's lots to talk about as we welcome Jane Hoffman to Talking Animals. Are you there, Jane?
Yes, I am. I'm Duncan.
Great. Thank you so much. Welcome to Talking Animals.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Great. Well, as I've suggested at a couple points in the show, including your intro just a moment ago, the Alliance really looks to be a spectacular, sprawling enterprise. Everything about it seems huge, from the number of organizations, the scope of its goals, the staggering size of the grants. And yet, as the Alliance's president and chair of the board, you're really sort of just one person effectively at the helm of this massive ship. So let's first find out about you. Did you grow up with animals? Are you a longtime animal lover?
Well, my family growing up always had, you know, cats and dogs, in the house. So yes, I would say I'm lifelong, you know, companion animal lover.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what led me to the Alliance is actually more through, I'm also, a lawyer.
Right. I wanted to get into your professional background since those are all kind of interwoven. Yeah.
So basically I was sort of, you know, just practicing law on Wall Street here in New York City, minding my own business. And somebody asked me if I'd be interested in forming one of the first animal law committees at a bar association, and that would be the one at the New York City Bar Association, which is one of course, you know, since I'm a New Yorker, we think that's one of the preeminent bar associations in the country.
But of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
So I said, yeah, this would be great. So we pulled together a committee, and fortunately I was at Simpson, Thatcher, and Bartlett at that point, and one of the partners there was going to be the next president of the association, and he thought this was an important committee to have the association, host. So we went ahead and formed the committee, and, you know, 15 years later, here we are. But this project, the Alliance, actually grew out of that committee.
Jane, if you could just take a second and maybe tell us a little bit about, before we get to the Alliance, what the Animal Law Committee, you know, what it really has done over those 15 plus years, and then we'll kind of get into how that sort of spawned, in a sense, the Alliance itself.
Sure. It's a group of lawyers who, you know, really their interest spans the gamut. Some are interested in estate and trust law, you know, who, when people want to set up pet trusts for their companion animals or other animals. There are, you know, corporate lawyers who just take on, you know, they'll critique legislation, they'll draft legislation in various areas of animal law. You know, and as we all know, in America, law touches everything we do, and that includes animal issues. So we have people who are interested in companion animals, farm animals, wildlife, and it spans the gamut of, you know, different disciplines of law. We started out basically sort of doing educational programs in the evenings on various topics of interest to people here in New York. You know, dangerous dog issues, again, estate and trust issues, you know, how to set up an animal law group and make it a nonprofit, and how to run it like a business, you know, all these kind of different topics.
Mm-hmm.
And we did an annual conference every year, usually in September. That was a very, you know, usually we started off doing a couple of topics, and then we sort of graduated into doing one all-day conference on one topic. For instance, in 1999, we did one on the legal status of non-human animals, and we really brought some of the leading, you know, people in the law and other disciplines that were interested in talking about that topic, and it was a very big success. And I think it was really a seminal moment, because I think that was sort of the launching pad for people to go out and back to their own bar associations and start forming them, because I think that the bar associations, committees at bar associations are really in a very important position to make major changes in the law with respect to animals. So that's, to me, that's one of the most important things that the New York City Bar Association Animal Law Committee did, which was really to go out and help other bar people, lawyers at other bar associations, form committees in their own bar associations. And now there's ones all over the country. They're in Connecticut, they're in New Jersey, they're in D.C., they're in L.A., they're in Texas,
wow,
they're in Chicago. And we're very pleased that we were then able to sort of export our annual conference to be hosted by other bar associations.
Sure, so that ripple effect has really been significant, sounds
yeah,
like.
Yeah, I mean, and that's really been, I think that's also sort of the importance of the alliance, is having it, to create a model that
yeah,
other people then can replicate, because it's all very nice doing it in your own backyard, but if we're going to have a major impact, you know, on either a statewide or a national level, or regional or national, we really need to just create a model that other people can say, hey, you know, that's a good idea. Let me try to do it in my community.
Sure. Well, let me just tell the listeners, this is Talking Animals and KUCI. I was speaking with Jane Hoffman, president of the Mayor's Alliance for New York City Animals, which brings together 60 animal groups there with the collective goal of making New York City no kill. If you'd like to join the conversation, have a question for Jane along the way, the phone number is 949-824-5824. So, Jane, okay, so the Animal Law Committee obviously has done a lot of cool things for a number of years, and I think also there's brochures and other things that you've published that have
yes,
helped in that education level.
Yes,
but
and if anybody wants to get those, it's the website is www.abcny.org. If you go to reports and publications, and then brochures, we did a number of ones. Of course, they're New York City, New York State law, but they may be useful to people anyway.
Sure, just the informational aspect's going to
mm-hmm,
be helpful for sure. So along those lines, then Mayor Bloomberg is elected, and
yes,
then this kind of brings us, I guess, to a pivotal part of where the Animal Law Committee kind of then sort of spawned the alliance. Maybe you could sort of take us through how that happened.
Sure. When the new administration came in, our bar associate, the New York City Bar Association, often encourages individual committees to write memos to the incoming administration to show them, you know, how perhaps they can do something better, or there's opportunities for them in an area that's of interest to them. Obviously, ours was animal law, and one of the topics that we touched in our memo was animal care and control in New York City. To which one could politely say there had been a lot of, as they say in government, noise in the system about animal care and control in New York City for a number of years, but nobody had really come forward with a solution, or at least a way to begin to find a solution to, you know, the problems that were perceived to be happening at animal care and control.
Mm-hmm.
Or at that point it was called the Center for Animal Care and Control. It's since changed its name to Animal Care and Control of New York City. But we sent this memo, and the administration was receptive and said, you know, this sounds like a really good idea. Why don't you come down and talk to us about it? And it basically was pulling together all the animal groups in a community collaboration with the ultimate goal of applying for Maddie's fund, though it would have had, it has a bigger purpose than just Maddie's, you know, some of Maddie's targets. But basically that was sort of the, frankly, the carrot that you we dangled out there, because what we were asking the city to do was really just, give us certain what we called non-financial resources, access to the parks, access to parking permits for the mobile adoption van, just establishing relations with various people in the different government agencies, the city agencies, that we really, you know, would be helpful. And these are all services that were really available to the general public. It wasn't like we were asking for anything special. It was just it had never been pulled together in one coherent,
right,
way for animals, for an animal issue.
And Jane, I definitely want to get in a moment to Maddie's fund that you just alluded to. But,
mm-hmm.
but before we do, just early on as you were kind of pulling these people together and sort of mm-hmm. trying to get this started. I mean, were there naysayers or at least those dubious that such an alliance with those sorts of objectives could get off the ground, could take flight, or was there just sort of initially like, hey, yeah, this is cool, and the momentum built pretty quickly with optimistic kind of attitude behind it, or...
Well, we're New Yorkers, so
yeah,
you know,
right,
we
exactly.
don't really like to agree with each other
right,
on a really regular basis.
Yeah.
But I would say that one thing that was extremely useful was the five major shelters in the city really came to the first meeting and sat down, and that would have been the ASPCA, BARC, Animal Shelter in Brooklyn, Animal
mm-hmm.
Haven, Bidewe, and
City Critters,
which was the foster care. They're not a shelter. They were a foster care group, and they sort of came in to tell the city that, you know, it's not just brick-and-mortar shelters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this whole other network of groups, and they work slightly differently. They use boarding kennels. They use foster homes. They use vets. But that's a huge resource that we could tap into. And that group was very cautious but receptive,
mm-hmm.
I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, basically what I was saying is, let's just sit down with the government folks. They want to meet with us. Let's, you know, hear what they have to say. We'll, you know, put some proposals on the table and see what they have to say. And the government came in force, I might add. 15 of them showed up at this meeting.
Wow.
And basically, you know, the rest was sort of history. It was not easy. It was bumpy.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very ambitious thing you're doing. But I think the important thing was we really narrowed it down to a very difficult but narrow mission. It's to increase adoptions, to increase spay-neuter surgeries, to reduce the killing of animals in the shelters. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to agree with anything. I mean, we're not going to tell you how to run your internal operations
sure.
other than you need to hit a certain minimum level of care and, you know, your conduct at adoption events and that kind of stuff. But basically, you just had to agree with us that increasing adoptions and increasing spay-neuter surgeries was a good thing.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, well, that's great, because I was just going to say, otherwise, I mean, you know, we're talking 60-plus animal groups. I mean, I'm talking to you from a radio station where there's 60-plus, you know, weekly music shows. I doubt you could get the hosts of all those shows to agree on whether a certain song was good or not. So how you get, but I can see how then you kept it very specific and sort of stayed out of, you know, those organizations. It's like, here's something separate that we can all agree on. And I guess that's how you got those
right.
groups to sort of, like, keep moving forward.
Right. And I think the thing was, it was seen as we are here to offer resources, training resources, you know, things as simple as what I call sort of the tangible manifestations of our collaboration, which is our orange Adopt Me vests, which all adoptable dogs wear. And they're the orange mesh that you see, road construction crews wearing, and it has big, bright patches in yellow on each shoulder saying, Adopt Me. And now people are beginning to associate orange in the vests with, you know, animals that are looking for new homes in the city.
Mm.
You know, our pet art kiosks, which we're, you know, trying to get off the ground, which are basically adoption ATMs. You can see about 1,000 adoptable animals on this touch screen. It works just like a cash machine when you go to the bank, and you can actually get a receipt with a picture of the animal, where they are,
wow.
you know, directions to what shelter they're at, if they're at a brick-and-mortar shelter, and our transport van, in which is available to all members of the Alliance to get animals from Animal Care and Control to their facility or to their foster homes or wherever they're going. So it was like, we're not asking you to do anything other than join this effort to try to reduce the killing of the animals in the shelter. We're not going to discuss fine points. We're all trying to adopt. We like, you know, we want to see that you have adoption protocols. We want to see, you know, that you do have a certain standard of care for the animals. But beyond that, it's your shop.
Yeah,
run it.
Stay out of your stuff. And,
right. And, you know, some people found when they joined the Alliance, started coming to training sessions, that, you know, there were easier ways to do what they were doing, but it wasn't, we were not coming in and imposing on them. We were sort of offering options to them. And
sure.
If
you'd like to join us, here's what we have in mind, and here's
what you have to do. And it was, and you know, what I tell people, and there have been a couple of, I mean, our most outstanding success in my mind, which is sort of replicating the bar associations, is there is now an Alliance for Philadelphia's Animals in our sister city the road a bit.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So again, much like we had with the Animal Law Committee, it sounds like there's starting to be a bit of a ripple effect.
Yes. There's one supposedly in Tulsa, I understand. I've spoken to various people who are trying to start them in their communities, but I would say the one that really got up and running and hit the ground is Philadelphia.
And really, though, I'd have to say when all is said and done in terms of the steps and the kind of the evolution or creation of the Alliance, to me, to paraphrase the Clinton War Movement, it's the grant, stupid, right? I mean, it's all about really the grants that kind of has given this thing kind of a whole different sort of energy and heft.
Right.
And, so I want to really talk about the grants in a moment. Let me just quickly say again, this is Talking Animals on KUCI, speaking with Jane Hoffman about the Mayor's Alliance for New York City Animals. If you have a question for Jane, it's 949-824-5824. So let's talk about those grants, because those are like huge in every sense of that term. So
yes.
I don't know if you want to talk first about the ASPCA and then how, you know, that may have kind of led to the next one, and then we can clarify for people that when you mentioned Maddie's Fund earlier what that means.
What that's
and how
about.
That works.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think one of the most significant things that has happened in New York City in recent history is a gentleman called Ed Sayers came in and took over as the head of the ASPCA. And he basically also came to New York City with the goal of making it no kill. And, you know, he's a visionary. I mean, he's a big thinker. And he immediately grasped what the Alliance was. He likes collaborations. He likes supporting other groups that are doing good work. And he has been enormously important in making the lead grant, and his board also embraced the idea and made the lead grant to the Alliance of $5 million. That's $1 million a year over, obviously, the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
That allowed us to secure the Maddie's Fund grant. Now, the Maddie's Fund grant is a private family foundation that Dave and Cheryl Duffield, the creators of PeopleSoft, which was recently taken over by Oracle, but they created this in honor of a dog that actually their companion, Maddie, who was with them through some very difficult times when they were creating PeopleSoft.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically said that if they made it, they would, sort of immortalize Maddie, and they have done so.
Yeah.
Their original gift to the foundation, which is the Maddie's Fund Foundation, was $200 million, and they just recently gave another $93 million to the foundation.
Wow.
The largest single grant that they've ever made was to New York City,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, New Yorkers think that's completely appropriate.
Right. Where else would you do it? Yeah, of course.
And that's basically $9 million. To the adoption portion of the project here in New York City, and it'll be approximately $5 million to the spay neuter initiative, which will be incredible. I mean, that program will provide very low cost, i.e., $10 for a cat, $20 for a dog, of any person, low-income New Yorker who has a Medicaid card, which is a very large population in New York, and they can fix up to 6 animals a year, and it's through private practicing veterinarians, because the idea is, as wonderful as spay-neuter vans are, and I wish we had twice as many as we do, you know, the whole idea of creating the the idea that animals deserve a lifetime of medical care too. That, you know, when you get them spayed or neutered, that shouldn't be the end of it. That, you know, they need to go in for checkups, they need their vaccinations renewed, you know, they need dental care, et cetera, whatever. You know, and hopefully if they have, they interact and have a good interaction and they're spay neuter at a private practicing veterinarian, if something is wrong with their animal, they'll go back to that private practicing veterinarian. So we're very excited about that. We're partnering with the Veterinary Medical Association of New York City on that. And we're hoping to get that program off the ground soon.
And Jane, so armed with those big, nice, hefty grants, then what are the alliance's specific goals in terms of numbers relative to years? Because it sounds like it's sort of graduated over the years that those grants have been given.
Right. The Maddie's Fund goal is to basically get all healthy animals adopted in the first 5 years. That's really supposed to be the target in the first 5 years, because God knows we're euthanizing or killing healthy animals in the shelter every day, which no one wants to do, including Animal Care and Control, which is an extremely important part of this effort.
Sure.
And they are making enormous strides of their own in increasing their adoptions. But the first 5 years are dedicated to, which doesn't mean we don't also deal with the what we call treatable animals, but the focus is really the first 5 years supposed to be on really getting all of the healthy animals out and into good homes. And then the next 10 years of the project, because Maddie's Fund is a 10-year project, is to focus on the treatable animals, so that at the end of the 10-year span, we're hopeful that there will be no healthy or treatable animals in New York City that are killed simply for space.
Mm.
Now, the Maddie's Fund grant cycle is 7 years, so of course we have to plan to be able to fund out the last 3 years of the project, unless, of course, we, you know, are super overachievers and get there before the 10th year.
Sure.
And the ASPCA grant is a 5-year grant.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always intended really to provide a lot of infrastructure, you know, and provide for things that Maddie's Fund does not pay for. For instance, the bulk of the money from Maddie's Fund really goes to the groups in the form of sort of incentive grants to help them increase their adoptions. There's a baseline year, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and every year after that, we ask them to try to increase their adoptions. And for every animal that they take from animal control over their baseline number, they get $150. And then we hope that they then turn that $150 into then increasing their adoptions the following year. They can use the money any way they want, but, you know, with the understanding that they need to increase their adoptions. And part of the way that the Alliance helps them is just this past weekend we had the second of our major adoption events in our city parks, because we don't really have malls here, so we tend to use our parks. And we had a really fabulous event out in Staten Island, because this encompasses all five boroughs, not just Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had about 10 groups out there with 3 of the mobile adoption vans, and it was just a great day. So that, you know, we try to do things. The Pet Arc kiosk is obviously a way to get the faces of the animals out in front of the public. The adoption vans, you know, going out on as many days as they can, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it sounds like really more and more of these things have become sort of woven into the fabric of the city. I mean, it
mm-hmm.
just sounds like wherever you go now, there's a chance to find out more, or
mm-hmm.
a chance to, like you say, almost like with a counterpart to an ATM,
mm-hmm.
to adopt an animal and look into this. I mean, so it just sounds like that's the reach is just so much broader and deeper, which is just great. And,
right. I mean, I think another part of the Maddie's Fund that's very smart is that they realize that this is America. Marketing and advertising has got to be done in whatever you're doing. So they actually make you set aside a portion of your of the grant money to actually create advertising, to increase people's awareness of the need to spay neuter, the need to adopt, not buy animals, you know, just really point out where people can go to find these animals. A lot of people come to our park events and go, I never knew there were 3 groups in Staten Island that rescued animals.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just really getting the name and reputation of the groups out in front of, you know, the constituency that they should be addressing.
And that's so great, because that the idea that then that sort of generates more attention and keeps it moving forward. Mm-hmm. Because one of the questions I had was, to what extent are there these huge grants almost have a downside, the sort of the pitfall of the windfall, as it were, where, you know, people would say, oh my God, look at all the dough they have, maybe we'll donate elsewhere. Actually, looks like we might have a call, Jane, if you want to take a listener call. Hi, you're on there live on KUCI with Jane Hoffman.
Hi there. God, this sounds so fantastic. Is there any hope of this being used as an example for other communities elsewhere in the States?
Yes, absolutely. We have a sister alliance, as I say, in Philadelphia, and we basically gave them all our documents. You know, I am a lawyer, so, you know, I'm attached to paper. And, you know, but I will be happy to speak to anyone anywhere in the country about how we set this up. I'm happy to share all our, you know, starting documents, you know, our website, whatever we can give to you. I'm happy to hand over to anybody who wants to start to try this effort. And I just think it's a unique way of approaching the problem. It's engaging government in the problem. And, you know, the animals at risk that we all want to save are in animal care and control, which is usually a government entity or contracted with a private group that's doing it for the government. So, I mean, the Alliance telephone number is 212-252-2350. If you call and leave a message with your name and number and what you want to talk to me about, I will get back to you. Or you can send an email to info@animalallianceny.org.
Cool.
Which is often the best way to get me, actually.
Okay, thank you very much. This is so amazing.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks for the call. And, yeah, I should have mentioned, and I will now a couple more times, that the website is animalalliancenyc.org, and it's just chock full of info. I mean, the stuff we're talking about, the list of all the organizations, but history and how to contact people and news stories and services, it's really, really valuable. And that's great, too, what you were saying, Jane, because I guess where I was before the caller called in is that, you know, that, again, it's like, hey, we've gotten this big dough. I could see where a lot of people, whether they're individuals, corporations, foundations, say, oh, well, let's kind of send our money elsewhere then.
Mm-hmm.
But what can you do to combat that other than the basic marketing that the Maddie's Fund itself allows for?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that it's really basically getting people to understand that Maddie's Fund, as wonderful as it is a very targeted fund. It has very specific things that the money can be used for, and that's all it can be used for, which is, as I said, 50% goes back to the groups which I think is wonderful, in the form of these adoption incentives.
Yeah.
You know, a certain percentage is actually set aside so that we can continue through through the 8th, 9th, and 10th year of this plan after the grant stops. And a certain amount is set aside for advertising and marketing. And that basically uses up the grant, astonishing as that is.
Yeah.
You know, you also have to remember, $9 million is an enormous amount of money, but that's over 7 years. So
yeah,
it's not like we got a grant of $9 million.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we fund a lot of other things that are not funded by Maddie's Fund, as wonderful as they are. For instance, we're engaged in one of our groups. We put out a request for proposals, and one of our groups submitted one we felt was worthy of funding to open up a storefront adoption center in Lower Manhattan.
Sure.
We also fund a position, the Feral Cat Coordinator, through our Feral Cat Council, which we set up because feral cats is a very important part of this problem.
Sure.
And also, for instance, we have the Breed Rescue Network. It's pulling all the breed rescue people into the solution. We have a lot of things. We also have a fund called the Picasso Veterinary Fund, which was named after a dog who passed away a couple of years, who came out of animal control and to one of the rescue groups and then to a great home. But that's a vet fund that is not funded by anything other than public donations, and that's for animals that are injured, that come out of animal control, that need a little extra, you know, medical care and TLC before they go on to a rescue group. And, you know, that's very good for team building. It's great for the morale for the people in animal care and control, that they feel that they can reach out and save this one animal that really touches them. We can't save them all yet, but, you know, that kind of thing. We just need to have people realize that, as much money as it sounds like, there is so much work to be done here, and this is such a big job that, you know, it ends up being a wonderful boon. And you know, is going to get us to our, you know, help us get to our goal. But we need the public, we need the community to really support this as well, both financially and by adopting, by spay and neuter, and by just getting the word out to their friends and family.
Well, and also the just the influence, like you've already talked about the Philadelphia thing. I mean, I've seen a couple things in your literature and or on the website that note, you know, of course, what an influential city New York is, New York City is, and that the goals the Alliance intends to achieve will be, quote, a beacon for the nation and the world.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that's already starting to be the case. And you know, it's interesting having done the show a while, it's really kind of a cool and neat how guests and topics intersect. I mean, just last week we had Kinky Friedman on,
mm-hmm.
who's making what's actually becoming an increasingly serious bid for governor of Texas. And he spoke very seriously and eloquently about his intent, if elected, to really try to make Texas a no-kill state. So, I mean, he's got a tall task, as he acknowledges, and someone called in and rightly asked, well, does that include no hunting and stuff? So, you know, I mean, that's a unique set of challenges there.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if he gets more and more serious and this actually somehow flies,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's going to look right to the Alliance for, like, hey, how can I do this, or how can I incrementally do this?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously other cities have, and you know, but if it starts to even eventually become where people try to take on a whole state,
right.
and make it no-kill.
Right.
And again, right now, to some that might seem, okay, well, that's a little bit of a pipe dream there, pal, mm-hmm. but not necessarily. I mean, who would have thought, you know, that you could make New York City no-kill?
Right.
Or
I mean, actually,
yeah.
Best Friends Animal Society out in Utah was one of the first grant recipients, and they're doing the entire state of Utah.
Right.
Now, of course, we have more people in New York City than
sure.
the
yeah.
entire state of Utah, but they have a lot more territory to cover. So, you know, we looked to them early on when we were forming.
Sure.
We're sort of a little bit different because we really came in more as a community collaboration, whereas they're a fairly large organization, but they had a tremendous challenge too. And, you know, again, that's another model to look for, look towards.
Yeah, the models work both ways, which is really mm-hmm. cool, because you're mm-hmm. looking a little bit towards Best Friends in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And then people are increasingly looking to you, and mm-hmm. it's just, again, it's just going to keep mm-hmm. spreading, which is just fantastic. So, Jane, I think we're just about at the end of our time here for
okay.
today, but, gosh, we so appreciate your time and explaining everything, and we're really excited. Again, the website is animalalliancenyc.org, and again, the organization itself is the Mayor's Alliance for NYC Animals, Inc. I guess we should put Inc. in, for
right.
especially if we're talking to a lawyer. We want to
right.
make sure it's exactly correct. But
okay.
thank you again for your time, and thanks for all your great work, and we'll keep a close eye on how the progress goes. It looks
okay.
like you're doing great.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Take care, brother.
Okay. Bye-bye, Jane. All right. That was, again, Jane Hoffman. I want to thank her for joining us and talking animals. It's the Mayor's Alliance for New York City Animals. One more time, it's www.animalalliancenyc.org. I'm Duncan Strauss. It's time for a quick version of Name That Animal Tune. I think you know how this works. It's like Name That Tune, except it's animal-related, right? So if you can identify this animal tune, then you'll call in 949-824-5824, 949-UCI. KUCI, and if you're the first person to do so, you will have your choice of those prizes we mentioned earlier in the show.
I do believe it. I do believe it's true.
Mm-hmm. Can you name that animal tune? All right, well, if you do it quickly, there's still time. But, meanwhile, we have just about reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. Duncan Strauss, want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. Want to again thank our guest, Jane Hoffman. One last time, it's the Mayor's Alliance for New York City Animals. The website is www.animalalliancenyc.org. Also want to thank you all for listening, for the phone call we received. We hope to join us next Monday, June 13th, when our guest will be Karen Johnson, who created clarinet therapy, in which she takes her greyhounds and her clarinet to convalescent homes and hospitals. And the combination of her music and these greyhounds, which are certified therapy dogs, helps these patients and elderly folks heal and feel better. She actually also uses a turtle in this form of animal therapy. So it should be pretty unusual and interesting. That's next Monday, June 13th, here on Talking Animals. And I want to again urge you to check out our website, talkinganimals.net. So when you get there, please sign up for our email list so we can keep you posted on guest bookings and all kinds of other cool things coming up. And email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com with guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, comedy bits, and more. anything else you'd like to pass along. I really look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease. This is a great, great blues show here on KUCI. This has been Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And as always, we're closing things out here with an animal-related tune. This is Wire with a song called Small Black Reptile on KUCI. Thanks again to Valerie and Sang at the Orange County Register for today's wonderful piece on talking animals. And we'll catch you next week on this very show, Talking Animals on KUCI in Irvine.
Like a reptile, broadened at the shoulders, and the swing of the hips, the whimper of fish, you crack up whales, you murder my soldiers, I'm generous, it's his. Remember when the eye of the pillar of wood, the bone on the first strings, diaries full. Look for a big fish, a crack of a whale, demand a right service. I'm generous, meet it. Badges of office, excess in price. Cultivating pets, expensive dates. Look for a big fish, a crack of a whale, demand a right service. Generous, you sit across the arms, the stacking of cheeks, the appetite rich from scaling peaks. The roof of a big fish, you crack up a whale, demand a rock service. And generous, you sit.
This is Knockout Greg from Knockout Greg and Blue Weather, and you're listening to Jeff Scott, infecting you with the blues disease.
Are you ready?
Thank you.
ago. The fool left home, he ain't seen him no more.